A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, dear listener. This is Ian Lee. Thank you so much for downloading Random Access Memories, a retro gaming podcast. I just want to thank and acknowledge all of my wonderful patrons that help keep this show going. So a big thank you to Martin, to Craig Hannon, that's Martin Warren, of course, for all the other Martins trying to jump on that bandwagon. Sam Hughes, Harsh Singh, new patron this month, Mark Gidley. Mark, thank you so much. Mark has written an excellent book about the BBC Micro, which I'll talk about in another show. And of course, executive producer Matt Stanley Evans, I'm standing up and saluting you. Thank you so much for your support. If you want to get the show ad-free, get a shout out on the show, go to patreon.com/Ian Lee. patreon.com/IAINLEE. Enjoy the show. Danny, I never know how to start these things, and I always feel a little bit uncomfortable doing the, well, this week's guest is, so I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
This week's guest is writer, producer, performer, television presenter, voiceover artist, Danny Wallace. You're nodding there. Did I get any of that wrong, or did I miss anything out?
Oh, there's so much you missed out.
Okay, well, people can Google it. I get now. What did I miss out?
No. It's such a strange thing, isn't it? Because I do lots of different things, so I never know what I am. Wikipedia describes me as a humorist, and I never really know. That sort of means he knows his way around a joke, but he's not quite funny enough.
I always think if humorist makes me think of Peter Ustinov. Humorist, well, maybe raconteur. Yeah. It's a fine line, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so. Bill Bryson, would he be? I mean, he's much bigger than me. But you know, people who work in and around and with
I suppose humorist would suit Bryson. I like to fall asleep listening to BBC Radio 4 Extra. Because I like hearing voices kind of mutter away. And between 10 and midnight, they do a thing called the Comedy Club, where they play old comedy shows. Some of them I don't think have been listened to for 20 years, because sometimes they do voices, if you know what I mean. They do voices.
Oh, I understand.
And I was drifting off the other day, and I know what it was. I was drifting off. I think this was the one. And it was... Oh, God, why do I want to say Russ Abbott? I don't mean Ross Noble. Ross Noble going around the world and doing comedy in, like, I think Africa, Lagos, I think he did, in a small club. And then at the end, it said produced by Danny Wallace.
That was me. That was me in my producer days.
I didn't know you did things like that back then. It was a joy, because I'm listening to it. Thank God I was thinking this is really entertaining.
Yes.
And it was an absolute riot, and I was surprised. I didn't know you'd produced radio comedies.
Yeah, it was. So, I mean, I started off weirdly. I mean, we'll get to it, but I started off writing for video games magazines, And then that led me down a certain path that ended up with me becoming a trainee producer in comedy at the BBC.
Right.
And almost my first week, I was like, how do I get out of here? As in an office. And how do I get out of the country? And I knew Ross. And I'm quite good at rhyming. And so the name Ross Noble Goes Global. And before you know it, I've been on the phone with Ross. And he, you know, liked going around the world. And we pitch Ross Noble Goes Global. And as with most of the things I ever pitched at the BBC, they said, no, we right. do not want to do this. But there'd always be a hole in the schedule. And then they'd come back and go, do you know that thing? And so one of those was Ross Noble Goes Global. We made a pilot. We went to Warsaw and Budapest. And I started to realize that the best thing to do with Ross was just to put a microphone on him,
yeah,
walk around with him, and point stuff out that he could then just kind of talk about, but also set little tasks. So I remember being in Shanghai with him, and we're walking around, and I'm thinking, well, how can we make this interesting? And I said, why don't we just follow an old Chinese man? And so we just followed an old Chinese man, and Ross just narrated the evening of the old Chinese man. And we followed him into shops and pharmacies
wow.
and kind of you know, bought things that he bought. And it just became this entertaining thing.
Did he know he was being followed?
No, no. But the weird thing is, we were so conspicuous. I don't know if you've been to China, but even other Westerners stop in their tracks and stare at you
yeah.
because they may not have seen other Westerners for like 3 or 4 days. So yeah. you have a Dutch family just walking down and just pointing. And Ross at the time, I believe, had bright red clown-like hair.
Mm.
So it would have been for the old Chinese man, had he realized, it would have been like being followed by Pennywise from It and his bespectacled pal. But the idea was that whatever we did, whether it was in Brussels or South Africa or wherever, we'd have some experiences. Then Ross would talk about them on stage and then I would somehow splice them together, which I did. And we did 2 series of that, I think. So I'm pleased that it's being listened to only by you.
the days when the BBC radio had the cash to do those kind of things. I have been to China. I was in China very briefly for a few days. And yeah, you stick out like a sore thumb as a Westerner. Yeah. And we were there. I can't remember exactly what it happened. It was around 99 or 2000. And somewhere in the world, Britain had accidentally fired a missile at a Chinese embassy or oh, something. Goodness. And we got word, you have to get out of China and get back to Hong Kong immediately. And wow. we, I think an English school or an English embassy in China, there was a riot around it because of this. And so we had to hire, it sounds so, so glamorous. It's bloody horrible. We had to hire yeah. a bulletproof limousine.
Oh, come on. You should have done that anyway.
To get us to the airport. It was horrendous. Wow.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
yeah. Missiles tend to bring out, the worst in people.
It does get people angry, doesn't it?
I find, although there was the story about, you know, they brought in these things now where every now and again your phone might go off and go, get to shelter, there's a thing happening.
Oh, or, yeah, activates the nanobots in our body, apparently.
Yeah, that's the other thing. That's the other downside.
The other thing it does. Yes.
But in America, I remember being in America, and you would get one that says, you know, careful, there's a flash flood coming. And you'd be like, I don't know, how did they get my number? And then a flash flood would happen. Or it'd be useful, it would say, watch out for a brown sedan because a kidnapping has occurred. And you would, you'd look out for a brown sedan.
Wow.
But one day it went wrong, and it alerted everybody on the island of Hawaii that an intercontinental ballistic missile had been fired at Hawaii to find shelter immediately. This is not a drill. And it sort of was a drill. It was a big mistake. But I really felt for all the people on Hawaii who thought they're in their last 5 minutes, who perhaps confessed to things to their partners. Just to let you know, I've been seeing your sister for the last 4 years, you know, and then nothing happens.
Yeah.
I suppose it was a moment of honesty.
Yeah, God, that's terrifying. Mm. I found it quite exciting when we had that test alarm. Maybe it was a year ago. I don't know. I remember my youngest got very upset about it, and he wanted to be out of the house when it happened.
Yeah.
But I found it quite exciting.
Yeah, invigorating.
Invigorating. You mentioned you used to write for computer game magazines.
I did.
How old were you, and how did you get into that?
I was early teens. It would have been about 91-ish, I suppose. There was work experience coming up at school, and I was offered the chance to go and dig ditches in a garden centre. And I thought, maybe I'll handle this one. And I had sort of got into Sega, I think because I moved around a lot as a kid, and I was always having to start again in a new city as an only child. The idea of my own video games,
yeah,
you know, something for me to do after school or to get a mate round and play against them. I became really, really, that's what I wanted. I wanted a Mega Drive, and I, you know, got a paper round and things like that to try and do it. But the games were so expensive, $39.99.
Yeah.
And it was the days to write off to some warehouse in Colchester, and they would send you your game within 28 days.
Yeah.
And you had to wait for forever. And one day I'd had a headache, and I took my £2 pocket money, and I went down to John Menzies, and I found a Sega magazine. I picked it up at random, and I went home and I had a bath. And then I saw this team who were like having fun, you know, this team on this magazine. What a great job. Imagine that, playing games and making a magazine and being pals. And I realized that I recognized one of the buildings that they were taking pictures in front of. And I thought, that's here. That's in Bath. And I looked at the address, and there was a whole company of video games magazines with all these like super cool people playing their games and having their fun and making their mags. And I thought, maybe I can get in there to do work experience. And so they let me in, and I did everything I could possibly do to be helpful. Just making cups of tea, even if people didn't like tea or they already had tea, I would make tea and I would just do whatever I could. And cut a long story short, they let me come back. And one day a reviewer got ill and they said, do you want to have a go at this?
Wow.
And I was like, what? And I said, well, yes. And so they gave me the game, Strider, a parallax scroller.
Oh.
Left to right. The guy, it was a Japanese import at the time.
We will be covering Strider at some point in this. I have a guest coming up. So I have played Strider in the last few weeks. Yeah.
Well, Strider was my kind of way in. And I played Strider to death. And then I played it again. And I sat up late and I wrote this review. And I was called to the editor's desk. And I thought he was going to go, we can't do this. But instead he went, do you want a job?
Wow,
and,
Danny.
You know, I was at school, so I couldn't have a job, but I could do freelance. And suddenly I found myself being given the chance to play games, or I might do the boring stuff, like just writing all the captions under the screenshots of the reviews, or I would take the screenshots for people. And I took real pride in it. You know, I didn't want boring screenshots. And I played and played games. And I remember one day I got a check for £100
incredible.
Of work done. And I walked past the window of Dixon's and I stared into it and I thought, I could buy anything here up to a value of £100.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I bought a Discman.
Okay.
But yeah, that was my way in. And then, thankfully, all the guys on Sega Power, how it would work is they would all go off to other magazines and work on those. But they would give you work as well. So suddenly you'd have a tips column in Super Play magazine, even though you didn't own a Nintendo and had no idea what you were doing.
So how did you do that then? If you didn't have the machine, did you just make it up? Did you ask people? Did you nick it from other magazines?
I think I would be sent tips.
Right.
You see, the guy who had that column before me was called Alan, and his column was called Ask Alan. And he had been like Sega Europe... Nintendo European Player of the Year or whatever.
Right.
And then he couldn't do it anymore. And so my column was called Don't Ask Alan. And so I was then just like going through whatever tips would come in and trying to make it into something.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know what I was doing. And I certainly had no idea what I was talking about. Sometimes I don't think I could even test the tips because it wouldn't have the game in or something.
Yeah.
So I was flying blind a bit, but I don't think anyone ever really read those tips pages and then did the tips.
Do you not think like I'm always amazed by cookery programs, right? Because I don't. Is there anybody at home actually taping it and then pausing it, taping it? But yeah. Is there anyone at home doing those recipes? And I'm one. Yeah, maybe it was the same for your tips that
it
no
could
one.
Be. It was sort of, it was there because it looked like it served a purpose. But yeah. I know what you mean about the cooking thing. You don't turn around and ask your wife, have we got any kirsch?
Yeah.
Because I want to make some almond friands or something. It's not going to happen. You just watch it for fun. But yeah.
So don't ask Alan. You did that for a while.
Don't ask Alan. Yeah. And then I was working for all these different mags. My first ever book, the first book I ever wrote was a cover mounted Mortal Kombat tips guide.
Right.
And that, I took a lot of pride in that. I made sure the tips were tip top. And the whole thing was, you know, delivered, and it was on the front of Games Master, and I was really kind of, I think I got a bit of a bug there. But then it came to what do I do after school? And I'd been with all these, you know, and the funny thing was, these magazines were selling like 200,000 copies. It was the huge Sega Nintendo wars at the time.
And, yeah.
And everyone involved, I thought, was like a real grown up, but they were.
So were you at school when you were doing this?
Yeah, I was at school.
Oh, wow.
So
that's incredible.
I would do it after school or in all summer holidays.
Yeah.
And they became, you know, a few of them are still really close mates. But they seemed to me to be proper grown-ups, but they were all about 23 and straight out of uni. And then it came to, what do I do? Do I go to university now? And so I decided to take a year out, and I got a staff writer job on Total, Nintendo magazine, called Total. And I had so much kind of energy, you know, when you're doing something you love and you're young enough and full of ideas. I was just writing just thousands of words and just filling the day with things I found really exciting. And you had this little taste of strange celebrity because young nerds would turn up at the office or follow you around on your lunch break as you went to Boots to buy a sandwich.
Right.
Because you were one of those guys, you know, you're a font of all knowledge.
Yeah.
So it was a really, it was such a fun time.
So how long did that last? It was then the radio, the next gig after that.
Right after that was, I was super into comedy, and Sega Power had a new editor and a new team. And I was really into On the Hour, you know, the Radio 4 news show. And I'd been given a tape of it. And I didn't know that radio comedy could sound like that. Yeah. It could be that funny or that imaginative. It blew my mind. And I took it into the office and shared it around with everybody. And then Chris Morris, around that time, started a Radio 1 show. And he was doing things that were just like, are you allowed to do that?
It was wild back then, wasn't it?
Really wild. So we were like sharing these tapes around, and overnight the tone of the magazine changed from sort of knockabout friendly fun to very odd, slightly dark humor.
Yeah.
To the point where we were invited into the publisher's office, who was just reading stuff out to us that was like sub Chris Morris weirdness, and just going, what does this have to do with Sonic the Hedgehog 3? Why have you compared it to the dampness of an old man's hand? He couldn't kind of, but it just sort of became this thing. And other magazines were going, what's happened to Sega Power?
Yeah.
They seem to have had a nervous breakdown. There's one story I remember. I told it to someone a few years ago. The boys who were older than me, I was never very good at telling if anyone was on drugs or not. And they, the night before a deadline, went out and had some fun, let's say.
Okay.
And then they had to come back the next day and finish off the magazine. And they had a huge exclusive with Virgin Games for the review of The Lion King. And it was a very important game to Virgin. And they'd given us, you know, we'd promised them 8 pages in the cover. And my friend Simon wrote it. But Simon was not in a fit state to be writing.
Yeah.
And he wrote a review 8 pages long that I believe was all from the point of view of a tiny fly that had landed on Simba's back and was telling the story of his day and of the game somehow through the perspective of the fly. And the problem with magazines is once you've done your piece, it then goes to like a sub-editor and an editor, and everyone signs off.
Yeah.
And everyone who was in the same situation as Simon signed off on this. But then you have to wait for about 2 weeks because you've put the magazine to bed. And then one day you know it's going to come back. And that was a very silent day in that office as everyone read this review back. And then the phone rang from Virgin, who were not happy that their huge tentpole release was actually just a review about a fly, you know. And they didn't speak to Simon for years, I think. I think his name was Doug. But so I was in this world, the strange world with these people, and it was getting me kind of interested in comedy and On the Hour and all these sorts of things. And so when I had this year on Total Magazine, this chance came up with my friends to launch a magazine about comedy.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. A short-lived but great fun magazine about comedy, which then set me up, took me to Edinburgh, judged the Perrier Award, became a trainee producer, all within a few months.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What is the game that you have brought today?
Let me take you back to the late 1980s and Loughborough Leisure Centre. And you've had a great time, Ian. You have been splishing and splashing with your pals, probably Anil and Simon. And you, they might have had the floaties out that day, I'm not sure, but you've got that incredible warmth and tiredness of your sort of muscles, your sort of growing, you know, slightly preteen probably muscles. And then you've gone to the shop and you've got your hula hoops and your Lucozade. And now you've got time before you're going to get picked up. And there is the Double Dragon arcade machine.
Wow.
And Double Dragon was such an exciting thing to come out. It felt dangerous because you felt like you're on the mean, mean streets. Like the streets of Loughborough probably were after 7 p.m. when you weren't allowed out anymore.
Yeah.
And the opening, you know, you just remember it. And Taito Entertainment, I think, and then the kind of the dragons. And this was around the time, you know, you've seen The Karate Kid. There's Chuck Norris you're sort of hearing about. There's Kung Fu. And here's a game where you can do it. And the only experience you've had of fighting was probably Way of the Exploding Fist on the BBC.
Yeah.
But now, here it is.
This was real.
This was real.
Yeah.
Highly accurate graphics, you know. And the great thing about it was the story it told in the first 5 seconds, which was there was a lady on the street and then a man comes up and he bashes her. That's not allowed.
No.
And hoists her over his shoulder, I believe, and takes her away just as the garage door rolls upwards and out steps you.
Yeah.
And it's very clear what you have to do. You're going to get her back by any means necessary. That's the whole mission done in sort of 5 seconds. And playing it one player was great, but playing it two player when you had your mates with you, that was just really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Every sound effect was pretty much the same. and you'd get different weapons. You could do a baseball bat. You could throw a barrel. You could be restrained from behind. You'd have to flip people over. And I have this one abiding memory of it, which I found really unfair, which was you could move left and right and up and down, always facing left or right. But there was this one guy, and you had no idea that they could throw knives, but this one guy would just walk onto the screen and just throw a knife at you.
Yeah.
And it would always take an energy bar away. And that, to me, felt like cheating.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew this is a dangerous game for dangerous guys like me. Did you play two-player?
I did play Double Dragon. My post-swimming game would have been... So I was born in 73, so I would have been about 83. So we would... Montem Sports Centre. Uh-huh. And it was... There was a big Clicks machine. Remember Clicks? K-L-I-X. They were the drinks machines.
What was that?
Brown drinks machine, and you could get soup.
Hot chocolate.
Soup or hot chocolate, but the hot chocolate tasted a little bit of soup, and no one wanted soup. So you'd have that wet hair. You would be given a penguin biscuit, and it was Defender. Defender was the one. And also, who would you trust to press your hyperspace? However, I totally get what you mean about that post-swimming buzz. There was a real energy off it. It felt very, very peculiar. So, I would have loved to have kicked some ass after the swimming. I would have loved to have walked down a computer street chucking barrels at people and dodging knives. It sounds like the perfect post-swim game.
It was. It was definitely the perfect post-swim game. And if they're going to re-release it, they're welcome to use that on the cover.
Yeah.
Just for sort of context for people to go, yes, no, I understand what that... Because there are games that fit into those. I remember talking to you once about going into town with your mum shopping.
Yeah.
And she would just like leave you in boots where you could just stand on one leg with, you know, maybe the other leg behind the crook of your knee.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you, like a pelican, as you played the free demonstrations on the various computer games.
Yeah. I genuinely think my legs are kind of bowed. And I genuinely put that down to that pose of standing like a pelican. Definitely had an effect. And well done. I think this is the second time in this run of shows that John Menzies has been mentioned. John Menzies, I think the one near us was in Uxbridge, which we didn't go to very often. If we got bored of Slough and we felt posh, we'd go to either Windsor or Maidenhead. And if we couldn't be bothered with them, we'd go to Uxbridge. So John Menzies, although I've since been told it's pronounced Mingus.
Yeah, John Mingus. Get that. I think up in Scotland, that's because Menzies is pronounced Mingus in Scotland. And it must be, you know, but you'd feel very strange. You'd be made fun of for weeks at school if you said, should we pop down John Mingus?
I wonder if John Mingus is, I mean, he must have been a person, right? W.H. Smith.
Yeah.
Do you know I don't know the name, so this is not quite going to be the story I was hoping it would be. But W.H. Smith, from what I know, was started by someone called H.W. Smith. But then their son took over and swapped the letters around. I think that's not really much of an anecdote, is it, actually?
That's interesting, though. But what happened to the J from J. Sainsbury's? I mean, I still call it J. Sainsbury's.
Tesco or Tesco's?
It's Tesco, but...
Technically.
You feel like it's Tesco's, don't you?
Yeah, that's what I go for. I was trying to explain, my kids the other day were asking about jobs I'd had, and I was trying to explain B jams to them, but they were, speaking of my kids, my boys are going to be 12 and 14 very soon. Wow. And they really wanted to, are you aware of the Five Nights at Freddy's?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so it's a game, jump scares, really good fun, and then there's a movie, but the movie is a 15.
Oh.
I took my kids to see, who are 11 and 13, I took them to see a 15 movie. And I kind of thought it would be okay because they're quite tall. But we got ID'd twice. Once when we were buying the hot dogs and the young person behind the counter went, you know, this is a 15. Yeah. How old is he? He's 11. I went, oh, he's 15. And he'd been trained to talk like this. Yeah. And I said, keep your hoodie up and stay on your phone the whole way in, right?
Yeah.
So I said, he's 15. Okay, what's his birthday? And I went, 2008.
She said,
She said, well, I did that. And she said, what's the date? And then I panicked, Danny.
Oh, God, because you don't know. Yeah, no. Which one is it?
So I said, it's January the 1st. He's a New Year's baby. What? Why would you say that? And then we got ID'd again. We got ID'd again. We managed to make it work. And actually, it's not a very scary movie. I would not recommend
it. Is it the law? or is it a recommendation?
I think it's, well, when I explained it to my youngest, Kim, because he gets he's a little sensitive. He said, have I just broken the law? I said, no. It's just kind of like a rule.
Yeah.
I think it might be a law. You know, I only discovered this the other day.
Why aren't the prisons filled with children?
You know, it comes up with the BBFC. This is a 15.
Well, why
you know,
if they watch one at home?
I think that's just terrible, terrible parenting. I don't think that's against the law. Do you know who? You know, there's a signature at the bottom of the BBFC thing.
Yeah.
Do you know who that is now?
No.
It's Natasha Kaplinsky.
Good for her.
And incredible. It was
weird,
isn't it? I was with my partner. I said, "Is that Natasha Kaplinsky?" She went, "Oh yeah, she's the head of BBFC now." Oh, okay. Well, apparently, that was a known thing and was unaware.
It's very strange, isn't it? Thinking that Natasha Kaplinsky from Channel 5 News has to sign off on what you can or can't watch.
And she made me try and sneak. Well, she made me successfully sneak an 11-year-old into a 15 movie. I was sat there thinking, oh my God, is this going to be like The Exorcist? Have I made the worst parenting? Here comes Patty the cat. The worst parenting decision. It was actually quite tame. I don't know why I was a 15. I do. There was one scene.
My mum accidentally took me and about 8, 11 or 12-year-old boys to see Red Sonja.
Oh, wow.
Somehow we all got in.
Yeah.
And my mum is a talker through films. She wants to make sure that everyone understands what's going on.
Oh.
But she was a talker this time. I've never heard her talk so much because she wanted to distract us from what was happening on the screen, which was women there.
It's quite booby, isn't it?
It's a lot of booby.
Yeah.
And lots of heads spurting blood as they pirouette through the sky.
Yeah.
But it didn't do me any harm.
I was watching a Wes Anderson film. I can't remember what it's called. The French Dispatch. I'm a big fan of Wes Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
And my 13-year-old was there, and I thought, oh, this is one of my favourite directors. You know, directed Royal Tenenbaums, my favourite movie of all time. And I thought this would be nice if he kind of watches this and gets to see the style and, you know, see the... And we watch it, and then about 10 minutes later, there's a scene about an artist paint, and there's a nude woman. And this is the first time we've encountered this. And I absolutely panicked. I went, oh, there's a naked lady. And I was trying to do the thing of turning it off. And of course I couldn't. And it was embarrassing for both of us. And I'm also worried that's an integral moment in a young man's life. And I think I screwed it up. I think I've screwed him up for the next 30 years now.
Well, it's over to him now, isn't it?
So it really is. It's
for him to deal with. Yeah. You know, you've done your best. You messed up once. but I think it'll be fine.
When was you talk about the Way of the Exploding Fist on the BBC. Mm. Did you have a BBC?
Yeah. Mm. We had a series of the most boring computers for children. So Dad would get it from work. And then it turned out it was possible to play a game on it. So we went down to Woolworths.
Yeah.
I went to the bank where I had a Griffin Savers account. I think I had about £2.25 on it. I took out £1.75, I believe. And I think that's how much the tape cost for Way of the Exploding Fist, leaving me with a cool 50p. So after the first 6 attempts of loading it on cassette, listening to the noises and all that kind of stuff, when it still hadn't worked, I thought, I don't think this is ever going to work.
Yeah.
But somehow it then loaded, and my God, that was a changing moment. And all you could do was punch or kick, jump, I think, as well. You could jump.
I think you could do flying kicks as well, couldn't you?
So it was that or punch and kick. And again, it was just those very simple sound effects. But the fact that what you did on a keyboard.
Yeah.
Also worked on the screen. You were controlling it. Was just so great, and it made me fall in love with two-player games, which really are the only games I like very much. I like multiplayer games, and I always have. Everything I played after that was always multiplayer. Whether it was Road Rage, was that what it was called? Road Rage with the no, it was something else, wasn't it? It sounds like Road Rage, but on the motorbikes. Where you're on a motorbike and you've got like a chain.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Or Streets of Rage. Or I remember playing a whole game with my dad, it seemed, of EA Hockey. And he was really going for it. He was doing really well. And then we realized that it was still on one player and he hadn't been controlling anything, which is when he thought, this isn't really for me, this. But I did hear this one beautiful story about a guy who dug out his old Sega Mega Drive, and there was some game like Outrun, say,
Yeah.
a racing game of some kind, and it would save your best lap so that when you next played, you would see how you did.
Oh, there was like a ghost car that was, yeah.
Exactly, a ghost car. And he realized that his dad would always play that, and his dad was better than he was. And he then realized that that ghost car that he was now watching 20 years later, whatever, was his dad's last race on Outrun. And so sometimes he will sit there and he will play it and he will race that car, but he always makes sure he loses so that that race can always be played again. And I thought there's something so beautiful there about those mundane moments of maybe sitting on a sofa next to someone you love, doing something completely normal that you think will be forgotten forever, but actually turns out to be a treasured childhood memory. The sound of the game, the music, the sound of the title screen as you press, enter or next or A or B or whatever. And that moment always being there for him so he can still race with his dad and he can transport back in time to those Saturday afternoons. And I thought that was an unexpected, beautiful thing about games.
That's fantastic. I think maybe we should end it there. I don't think we're gonna top that. That's gorgeous.
Always end on a high, eh?
I should ask what we speak infrequently, and you've been so generous to me throughout the years with your time and your support, and it's appreciated.
Well, I think you're great, that's why.
Thank you, man. That means the world. I do remember the time you tried to get me to eat prawns, and because I'd never had a prawn before, and I think I refused. And it was, I have had a prawn since, and it was bloody horrible.
They're awful, aren't they?
They're terrible things. What are you doing now? I don't know what you're doing now, if you're doing anything.
I am doing a I've just finished a new book, which will come out next year, and a new kids book as well, which will come out. It's been quite a writer year. I found that since the pandemic, there's been a lot more writey things going on and a lot less other stuff. But I do my radio show as well, and yeah, I try and keep out of trouble.
It's the best thing. Don't go around chucking barrels or things like that, people. It's not appropriate.
No, I don't do that
Danny,
anymore.
it's so lovely to see you. Thank you for
You
your
too.
time, and I hope to see you soon.
Me too. See you soon.
Thank you so much for downloading Ian Lee's Random Access Memories, a retro gaming podcast. Do check out the Patreon, patreon.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ian Lee, IAINLEE. And also go to my YouTube channel and look for the Random Access Memories there. Again, it's youtube.com/Ian Lee. Thanks for downloading.